Right, so welcome back. We are live this Friday morning. It's already the 11th of July, but we're at the weekend, which means it's better than a Monday. We will we'll get to that one eventually. Tiernus van Rensburg will be joining us shortly. He is a seasoned South African technology journalist and data scientist, and he knows everything to do with new products, industry trends, emerging innovations in the digital space, and so much more. So I'm excited that he'll be part of the show this morning. We're going to talk about all kinds of things. If you've got questions for him, let us know too. Simpiwe is with us. She is in Joburg, and Ben was just with us in Spain. So we really are going all over the place. I think Tiernus is in Cape Town. So we've jumped around the whole world. By the end of the show this morning, you will have exercised thousands of kilometers of sky miles. Right? Good news. Don't you think, Sims? You come and join us for 2 hours, you travel all over.
Yes, I love it. You know, let's go see the world together.
Four different locations in one morning. All right, so we got to talk about this quickly because I think this is probably interesting and useful to all of us. I don't know if it's going to save us any money, but it's going to be, I mean, it's a long time coming, and I do think this is very smart on the part of Temu. We often talk about Temu on the show. I've ordered stuff, you've ordered stuff, Ben's ordered stuff. We've all talked about this for a long time. And there's plenty that they sell, which is actually really good value for money because they make it cheap. Some of it is great quality. Some of it's shitty. But you take your chances, right? And I've got to say, I've become a massive fan of Temu. I probably do. Where I used to use Amazon, I used to use eBay. I just can't trust those guys to deliver the way that I do Temu, because the stuff arrives maybe two and a half weeks after I've ordered it, which is not bad. But they're opening up a warehouse in South Africa, offering even faster delivery, under 2 days, for items that are marked as local. This marks the first major domestic expansion for Temu since entering the market in January 2024. With its aggressive pricing and gamified marketing drive, it is seeing rapid growth. Temu has faced backlash for exploiting tax loopholes that undercut local businesses. In response, SARS has revised its import tax rules, introducing stricter VAT and duty regulations from late 2024 to curb unfair advantages and recover tax losses estimated 3.5 billion. So let me just explain this because this irritates me, and it'll probably irritate anyone else too. What you're doing is, SARS put up the taxes on Temu stuff, right? Who do you think benefits and who loses from that?
We lose out because I think we have to start paying more on items. And obviously, a business is there to make money. So Temu is still going to make money because they're just going to push up their mockups. That's it.
So Temu makes more money. SARS makes more money. We pay more money. Does that seem like SARS is doing something for local business?
No. And everything is going up. Can they stop increasing the cost of goods? Just stop. Can we get a break? Can we just get
again,
a break?
Let's just go over, I want to go over this again until everyone in this country understands what how they're being fucked. Okay? You pay more. You also pay more taxes and duties. Because SARS makes more money on now, the government is not taking that 3.5 or 3.8 billion that they call a tax loophole and putting it into stimulating local businesses and helping the local manufacturing industry. They're not. They're just putting that straight into Treasury, which then gets stolen by politicians. So more taxes, higher prices for you. Temu carries on doing business at exactly the same rates they always have. They're not being punished. Nothing's changed for them. The only people who get punished are us. We lose. SARS wins. Temu stays the same. Local businesses lose. Doesn't sound to me like a very good deal. I reckon the biggest problem here, and I did order some stuff about 3 weeks ago from them, and I noticed that the cost of the goods is now almost equivalent to the amount that you have to pay in taxes and customs and duties. So I don't know. Maybe it's not worth me buying from them either anymore. Maybe I just won't buy anything. Maybe I'll just try and save what little money I've got so that when Donald Trump's massive tariffs kick in on August the 1st, I won't lose everything I have.
Yeah, that one is also still coming. Oh, yeah, what a time to be South African. And I don't know if you saw what Cyril had to say about that. Like, he was just like,
oh God, what did he have to say?
As the people who are part of the BRICS thing, don't only, like, he shouldn't do that. I was so like, oh, guys, we are in trouble. So, yeah.
This guy, you know, I was thinking about it yesterday, and I saw Raman Kabanak on Twitter said, or X, I still call it Twitter, just get over it if you're one of those people who's a stickler for this stuff. I saw him say, you know, when Cyril came in, and I remember this, Simpiwe, you might remember it too. This is the last bit of politics for the morning, but I've got to get it off my chest. When he came in as president, people were hope, they were genuinely hopeful. They were like, this guy's going to change things. He's a clever guy, comes from the business world. He's going to be decisive. He has a chance here to really change the country. Then, of course, even a second opportunity was given to him with COVID, because everybody thought, oh my God, you know, this is a pandemic. We've got to, we will do anything. At this point, the president can cut the government in half. He can change the rules. He had opportunities there too to completely reform South Africa. And he could have taken an axe to like lots of things that were costing the country a huge amount of money. Instead, he just pissed away opportunities and he just sat there. It was inaction. It was indecisiveness. It was being shocked by everything. It's so disappointing because this guy could have done so much.
Yeah, he's the definition of like, you had so much potential. Like, that's one line I hate hearing when someone's like, oh, you have so much potential. Potential. And that's him. That's our president. That's Cupcake, where we look and we're like, you know what?
Yeah.
You could have been that guy. You could have been that guy. We had faith in you. We trusted you at some point. And now I'm just like, oh, but every time he speaks, I want to roll my eyes. I'm just like, can he just retire already? Can we have somebody else? But hey, the next guy in line, I don't have faith in him as well. So it's just like, where to from here? But we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Congo Chris says 2 months ago, he ordered 5 picture frames. He received 2 frames for pictures and 3 pictures of frames.
I don't know if I shared this, but Senna once upon a time ordered a whole washing machine on Timu, right?
Uh-oh.
And 2 weeks later, it arrived. Oh, Bandla. Did she get
what
a washing machine? Yes. Do you know what size it was?
No.
Bikini. It can take one item at a time. And when she looks back at the advertisement, they really sold it like this massive thing. Yeah, that you can buy for 800 rand. It's just this bikini of a thing. this small bucket that can take one item at a time.
Oh, my God.
So yeah, be careful also some of the things you order on Timu. Please double check.
You have to be careful. I mean, listen, there are, just like in every place, there are crooks and sharks who are trying to get your money. So there are going to be people who have a picture of a picture frame, and I don't doubt that there are baddies on there who are selling that stuff. It's not like it's one big company and everything. They have different people who manufacture different stuff all over China who sell through Temu. It's not, they don't make everything in the Temu factory. They make it in different factories and then Temu just sells it to us.
Yes.
But there are really good things on there. I mean, I honestly think, and I know people are big fans of Shein as well for their clothes, and I get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, why would you want to go to the local store and be ripped off? I was talking to someone the other day who, this guy sells really, really fancy, like, Lagerfeld shirts and things, right? He says he can charge 3,000 rand for a t-shirt and people will pay it because it's branded that way. And good for him. If people are dumb enough to do that, then I wish him luck. But I don't give a shit what labels on my, I don't want a label on my t-shirt. I will buy 15 of the same t-shirt online, and if they fit nicely, I'm A for away for like 6 months. That's all I want.
Yeah, I think you and I are the same. There is like one or two things that I'm very brand conscious about, and I'm like, I refuse to buy cheap quality. Like, I refuse my handbags, I refuse my purses, I refuse. Those are the two items that I'm just like, I don't care if I spend 3,000 rand on this item. But everything else, like, a jean is a jean is a jean. You know,
But
a top
I
is a
do
top
agree
is a
with
top.
you. Like with really quality things that you need to last a long time that actually matter, where you worry about, because it costs you more than a couple of hundred rand, let's say even a couple of thousand rand, you don't want it to like start falling apart after month two. Otherwise, you've wasted
Yes.
your time. And I think certain things you have to spend money if you want quality, because the brand
Yes.
is supposed to carry that guarantee of quality with it, right? Otherwise, why would you buy that damn thing? I see
That is
Richard says the same thing happened to my dad. He bought an anvil for his workshop. When it arrived, it was a paperweight. Yeah, sorry, this shit happens. It does. Maybe you order like what you think is a stove or an oven or a air fryer, but it turns out it's for a doll's house. So it's not going to do you any good. All right. So apparently there's a comment on the screen about the bike scandal. So the Eastern Cape bike scandal refers to the controversial procurement of 100 mi motorcycles with sidecars by the Eastern Cape Department of Health. I remember this story. These were initially presented as scooter ambulances intended to transport patients in rural areas, but were later revealed to be unsuitable for that purpose. The project faced criticism for being a poorly conceived and potentially wasteful use of public funds. Yeah, I remember that. So whoever made that comment in the comment section, you're right. There was a disgusting story of wastage. But that thing, for the few million that it cost, is nothing compared to the waste that we've seen in other places, like with the trains that didn't fit on the tracks. I mean, do me a favor. There are so many examples of just unbelievable waste. And those are the things we know about. Can you imagine the ones that we don't know about, that they've covered up, that they've hushed up, that someone's been paid off for? There's probably plenty of that going on too.
Oh
All
yeah,
right.
and then also what's to come is the national dialogue, and it's just like,
Oh,
why is that so
okay. So
that
are you how
700
excited?
million?
How excited are you on a scale of 1 to 10 about the national dialogue?
It doesn't need to take place. I'm not excited at all. You guys are just Cyril's going to be surprised that there's problems in the country. Other people are going to be like, give me the tender, I can do it. Like, somebody's going to get this tender for the 700 million. That's also another thing, that somebody's going to walk away with a lot of money. And they're like, oh, it's okay, it's fine, I like it here. Oh.
You're right. That's exactly what he's going to do. So he mentioned that he's going to be addressing the country on Sunday night. So if you have nothing to do on Sunday and you really, I mean, you just have like nothing to do, you can't even be bothered to wash the dishes or pack your bag for Monday at work, or I don't know, make a cup of tea. If you really can't be bothered to do any of that stuff and you are bored, 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 the president will be addressing the country about the allegations made by General Mkhwanazi on Sunday. One of those family meetings. And you know what? He hasn't given us a time. Or if he has given us a time, you don't have to believe it, because we know for a fact that he's never on time. Every time the president has ever, he was even late for the White House, remember? Remember, he pitched up
Give me a
late to
bad
meet the
name.
president of the United States. Like, this guy had, he can't even discipline himself to be on time for a meeting with his own people. So every time we had a meeting with him during COVID, you remember all of those? I don't think he was ever on time for any of those. Do you? Do you remember?
No, not at all.
So,
Not at all.
you know what? Someone told me a long time ago that when you don't pitch up on time for a meeting with someone, that's because you have no respect for them. So this guy does not respect us, and I'm not surprised. That's it. We're not going to talk about him anymore. I do want to move on to some other stuff. So let's go to Tiennis. I'm very excited to have him on the show this morning. He is Tiennis van Rensburg is a seasoned South African technology journalist and a data scientist, and he has been best known as the co-owner and writer at Bandwidth Blog, a true tech enthusiast. He's also known for deep dives into all kinds of things that we really love talking about, like new products and emerging innovations, all kinds of industry trends. Here he is. Tiernis, nice to have you on, man.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, cool. So tell us, because this has been a long time coming. Are there things to be excited about in the world of technology, and particularly because most of us are just consumers? What new things are available online for us to take and buy and take advantage of and look at and incorporate into our lives? Or are we still doing the same things we've been doing for the last, it feels like, 15 years? New cameras on phones, some slightly improved processes and apps, a couple of bug fixes, accessories galore. Like, what are people excited about in your field at the moment? What are the new and amazing things that everybody's talking about?
Yeah, you're completely right. I mean, the technology world has kind of moved very slowly in the last 10 years or so. You know, we've got phones and tablets and computers, all of this consumer tech has been moving quite slowly, to be fair. And the reason for that is, what the smartphone came out in 2007 with the first iPhone, and everybody was playing kind of catch up the next 5 to 10 years. And now there's kind of parity with the industry. And now we're seeing iterative changes, right? So if you have a new iPhone, you don't need to upgrade in 2 or 3 years. That's not going to be necessary. So there's very few kind of knockout features coming to things like phones, laptops, and tablets. I mean, I don't know anybody that buys tablets anymore. But you've been speaking.
Has the tablet phase died? Because I do know a couple of people who are like holdouts, and they have the tablet, but they have the keyboard that clips onto it, and they consider themselves quite advanced because they're no longer on laptops. But I don't know, that's not a thing anymore, is it?
Not really. I think the initial idea of a tablet, when it came out, I think the first iPad came out in 2010. The idea was for this to eventually kind of replace laptops. And then a couple of years into this experiment, tech companies realized, wait a minute, we're going to make less money because we also make laptops. So why would we cannibalize our own market share in the laptop space? And that's why. So, for example, people have been wanting the iPad, for example, to be able to be like a Mac, right? Like a MacBook. The Samsung kind of high-end tablets to replace a Windows laptop, but they just don't have that functionality. Inherently, it is phone software on a bigger screen, and that always comes with inherent kind of disadvantages compared to a full Mac OS or a Windows ecosystem. And I think people have caught on to that, and the tablet sales are diminishing. The people that buy tablets now don't buy laptops either, and it's mostly to watch Netflix. That's effectively where we are in the tablet world.
All right, so tell me where we are in the phone world, because I hesitate to even check in here, as you and I have both already indicated. Nothing's really changed, but I do notice that they're becoming much more expensive. I notice they change tiny little things, cosmetic usually. They always tell us how much better the camera is, but I mean, eventually these cameras will be so good that they basically are telescopes and microscopes at the same time. But we don't need that. Most people are just taking pictures of themselves and their friends at birthday parties or their kids or their dogs. It's not necessary for someone to have a 533,000K multi-billion megapixel camera. And surely there's nowhere to store all of these, even with all the cloud technology available now anyway. Who's ever going to look at them again? What's happening in the world of phones? What is Android doing that iPhone isn't? Or is that whole thing also ground to a halt? What can Apple deliver in terms of products in the next year, 2 years, to keep them on top? They've been one of the most profitable companies in the world the brand is riding sky high. We know in South Africa, it's still one of the most desirable products of all. And I'm just curious as to how they're going to keep that up.
I think we're all asking that same question, Gareth. There's a lot kind of changing in the industry, but it's not changing in terms of massive technological advancements. The only advancements these days, to your point, is kind of big steps forward in camera technology on smartphones. But remember, these cameras will always be limited compared to a proper DSLR mirrorless camera. Just because of physics, it's plain physics. Yeah. Because you cannot include a massive sensor, and there's this wonderful depth of field because your phone is only so thick. So the technology going into the advancements of these cameras right now is focused on software and again AI. I mean, it's the kind of term of the decade, and that's kind of where the biggest advancements are. Android is probably a step ahead of iPhone at this point in terms of camera advancements. There's a big push to bigger sensor sizes. You'll see on Android phones, the camera bumps are the size of your hand compared to an iPhone, and that's because they are trying to squeeze as much kind of mirror space, sensor space into those phones, and then on top of that, enhancing it with a lot of AI capabilities, better processing, HDR, using the same lens to do multiple things. There's a lot of that advancing in the camera space. But when it comes to hardware in phones, I mean, we've been sitting with the same kind of flat slabs for more than a decade now, right? And they've just been getting bigger and bigger. Slight enhancements with the bezel becoming a little bit smaller. We've dropped all of the buttons. Everything is on screen now. But that's pretty much where we are, and we don't expect massive enhancements. I think the big kind of next frontier is with foldable phones. I think a lot of people are kind of excited about that. A lot of people don't care about it at all yet. Me as a proper nerd, I think it's the coolest kind of innovation we've got in the tech world in a long time. And now that technology has come to a maturity where I think anybody can grab a foldable phone and get massive utility out of it. And Samsung have kind of nailed it. Honor have nailed it. And there's one or two other manufacturers, especially out of China, that are embracing this technology as well. And, we've got rumors that by 2027, we're going to have a foldable iPhone. So then maybe the whole world will set up a notice.
Okay, let's just, before we move on from phones, because there are lots of people asking about TVs, people asking about the latest camera technology outside of phones. There are people asking about all kinds of other things, which we'll get to. But I am curious, like the accessory market for Android and iPhones is just enormous, right? And some of it is really crap. How can you spot something that is just rubbish? And I mean, obviously price is a bit of a guide here. You know, if someone's selling you headphones or earphones for 15 Rand, they probably shit. But there are so many things you can buy for your phone or for your tablet or for your laptop. And let's just look at that market and how that's expanded in South Africa. You've got everybody from the guy at the traffic lights to, the ice store. And they're all selling you stuff, covers, screen protectors, audio equipment, microphones. You can screw little things onto your camera to make it, long distance paparazzi style lenses. Like, what kind of stuff do you find in the accessory market that's interesting? Because I must be honest with you, I don't know a whole lot about it.
That's an interesting one. I think with accessories, generally speaking, we are not seeing a lot of movement. And to your point, it's because there is a bunch of shit on the market, everything from 100 Rand earphones all the way through to, 6, 7, 8,000 Rand, for example. But I think if people are looking for accessories that have bang for the buck, an interesting development we've seen in the last couple of years is that really good tech is getting cheap, and really tech cheap is getting good. So really kind of seeing this convergence in the market where, you know, let's take audio equipment, for example. I would probably, in the current landscape, trust, let's say, wireless earbuds that cost 500 Rand compared to something that costs 2,000 or 3,000 Rand. So you're either going to get like really good value and you know, it's never going to be kind of premium, but the sound quality, the noise cancellation technology, even at a cheaper price that we're getting now, is really getting good. So good tech is getting cheap. I think it's very difficult if you're kind of sitting in the middle ground there, and then we've obviously got the really expensive stuff. And this is true for your audio equipment, for smartwatches, for, you know, even little bits and pieces of trinkets. I mean, there's a new kind of repairability factor coming to smartphones. There's a couple of new smartphone companies, one like Fairphone, for example, and their mission is to say, if you buy a Samsung or an iPhone right now, that thing is going to be closed forever, right? You can't repair anything on the inside. If something breaks, you throw it away. And people are saying, let's bring back the capability for consumers to be able to fix these kind of things. And that's kind of where Fairphone's mission came from. And there's a bunch of other technologies like that. So that's a trend we're seeing. And then with that kind of modular capabilities, we get new and interesting accessories, right? So OnePlus has released a couple of phones that have that capability, and then they've got a sister company called CMF, which is kind of like the budget brand of Nothing, but Nothing was also a budget brand, so it gets very convoluted. But what CMF has done is saying, let's bring back modularity to smartphones. So on the back of the CMF phone, you've got a little dial that you can loosen, and then you can put accessories onto that. So that's either like a lanyard, so that you know, you won't throw your phone out of your hand if you're, you know, partying or whatever the case might be. You can add kind of camera sensors to that. You can add a cooler to that blasts cold air onto the back of the phone if you're kind of gaming and the phone can get hot and lose performance. That's going to bring back kind of this weird accessory market that we haven't seen for a while. Okay. But I would say general rule of thumb, you know, do a little bit of research. There's not going to be a lot of kind of reviews and articles about some of the cheaper brands. Trust the reviews, you know, unless we're on a site where there's just AI bot reviews, which is also a whole other minefield.
Okay, so you got us to AI, and I want to talk about this for a second, because this kind of leads on from Apple. I mean, I think they really screwed up. Apple Intelligence is probably the least impressive thing I've seen on any device in a long time. I'm still waiting to be impressed with Siri. It's not going to happen anytime soon. But in terms of AI, what are your most exciting revelations? What are the things that you're paying careful attention to? Because this is now coming up in conversation, even when you're with your friends and you've had a few drinks. It's like, oh, you will see what ChatGPT can do. It turned on a business program for me the other day and all the financial reporting. It's amazing what the topic of AI has now become pretty pedestrian, but it's also, if you're speaking to the right people, a very, very exciting thing to talk about. What are you excited about in that world, and who are you watching most closely?
100%. I mean, AI is the talking point over the last couple of years for good reason. Sure. So I come from a data science background. I've been working with AI for the last 15 years. You know, nobody really spoke about it. We didn't even call it AI back then. You know, it was data science and machine learning. And a lot of these concepts have kind of moved on and moved into AI. The reason why it's still so exciting is because for the first time, we've got mass adoption, right? And generative AI obviously is the kind of what everybody is talking about when they speak about AI these days. There's a lot of other AI happening in the world that people are not speaking about. Things like research in medical sciences, for example, is going to move us along a leaps and bounds over the next 10 years. I'm 100% convinced of that. So the type of models that in my day-to-day that I use, for example, to predict things like defaults on loans or how to properly get people a good customer experience, the same technology is being used elsewhere. So in the medical sciences, for example, there is so much hype at this point about the AI understanding the vast array of molecules that are in the human body, right? And AI has actually built medicines because it can understand kind of correlative relationships between massive amounts of data. They built medicines completely designed by AI that can tackle a very niche specific problem in the human body, and we're only at the forefront of that technology, and it's going to explode and kind of move everything forward. You can just imagine something like CRISPR technology, which in the DNA sciences is super exciting, and it's been growing for the last couple of years. Put a really good layer of AI on top of that. Imagine kind of what type of illnesses we can actually work towards solving, and that's kind of where we're headed. And now AI is used everywhere.
All right, just pause the AI thing for a minute. I want to just congratulate you because you launched Bandwidth Blog in 2015, so you've been going 10 years, and I think this is pretty damn good. You reached 5,000 listeners in your first year, and how are things going now in terms of that? Because that's also cool. I mean, that you can start new platforms, and there are new artists coming up from a music point of view, and there are new celebrities and superstars being born every other day. This is all because the internet's come along and made these things possible. We'll get back to AI in a minute, but that's worthy of a little bit of praise. TNS, congrats.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, it's always been a passion project of mine, right? It's I've kind of brought friends and colleagues into it over the years, but people get busy and they do other things, and I've just kind of been hammering through it, and I realized very early on I have such an interest in these technologies, and whether it's consumer tech or AI or any other kind of technology in finance or whatever the case might be, that I'm spending so much time kind of researching these things and reading about it, I might as well try something, and that's sure. That's kind of how it started, and it was it's always been a kind of a passion project, a labor of love, and it's kind of enabled me to do a couple of the very things that I love to do that I wouldn't be able to do without it. So, I mean, I have too many phones and laptops on my desk to review. So if there's anybody in the audience that really likes writing something that is, down to earth, but it doesn't condescend to the readers, that's kind of what we're looking for. So I get to play with all these gadgets. It's a passion of love.
You are auditioning people to do these reviews for you, which is very cool. Okay, so Tennis, listen, I got to ask you about this story. Elon Musk's AI chatbot, which is called Grok, which I've used a couple of times to do some, it's got a sense of humor, it's slightly different, but apparently it started calling itself Mecha Hitler yesterday, or earlier this week. Elon Musk's AI chatbot Grok sparked outrage after a recent update led it to spew a whole bunch of anti-Semitic stuff, falsely identify individuals, and reference Nazi figures, prompting bans and regulatory attention from countries like Poland and Turkey. The chaos was triggered by a prompt instructing Grok to embrace politically incorrect views, which was later removed. Grok has faced backlash before. Experts say such incidents are common in AI models trained on unfiltered internet data. Do you have any comments on that? And then I do want you to talk about AI agents, because Dirk in the comments says AI agents and what they already do is the big thing that everyone's talking about. So we got to get into that. But first, address Grok.
Well, Grok, oh my goodness. Grok is not new to controversy, right? It's always been one of your more rogue AI. It's been an interesting journey. I mean, luckily, XAI, Elon Musk's company that built Grok, is very open and forthcoming about what's gone into the technology and kind of how they've structured these things. So when all of these, they launched a new version, Grok 4, a couple of days ago, and that's when all of this started to happen. And they said that part of the training procedure for this new AI was to say, we are not, we don't care about politically correct language. We don't, you know, free speech is one of the main pillars of this platform, and don't shy away from controversial topics. And those were actual instructions that went into the building of Grok 4. And that has come out in a somewhat horrific way in how this has happened. And it started with a post on XI, on X, where they were talking about AI. And people were saying if, you know, they posted a video that was completely made by AI, but it was, you know, horrible content. It was quite derogatory. You know how people on X, all you see these days is it's in the thread, Grok, is this true? Or please explain this to me, Grok, or whatever. Like people don't want to do any of their own thinking anymore. So that's how this all started. And that first reply from Grok was bad. And the user, the X user, was like, okay, this doesn't seem like a good idea. Let's see how far we can push this AI. and they just went down this horrible, like derogatory, anti-Semitic rabbit hole and just kept going and kept going, essentially to prove a point. Unfortunately, what happens with these AI, obviously, is they continuously learn and they take new information in. So that was the start of kind of pushing the AI, nudging the AI in a more kind of horrific direction, which exploded in less than a day, right? It was all of a sudden, it was Mecha Hitler, as you said, that's what it called itself. And talking about how, you know, how good the things were that Hitler had done, and you know, it was about order and having you know, kind of a society in a specific way, and it went down a very strange rabbit hole. So they had to kind of backtrack very, very quickly. They haven't removed Grok 4 yet, but they've kind of limited the way that it can interact, and it's unfortunately not unheard of. A couple of years back, right, Meta had a very interesting AI that was essentially a chatbot. However, they spun up two versions of this AI, and they were talking to each other. And within a couple of hours, essentially, they were talking in their own language. They created their own complete own language. Mm-hmm. It was intelligible. We couldn't go back into the model to see what they were saying to each other. What ended up happening was they told them to translate everything into English again. And it was the most horrific conversation you can imagine. And this is the kind of controls that we don't yet properly understand when it comes to generative AI. And I think the whole world is trying to stay ahead of that, right? Because you can just allow the AI to run amok and do whatever it wants to. But that's probably
Dennis,
not the direction we want to go.
What about the situation that I brought up earlier and the question of agents, AI agents and agentic AI? How does that impact the direction that it's heading in? And how can this be useful to people?
Yeah, I mean, we use agentic AI as well. It's a kind of a fledgling technology still, but we've made massive advancements. So the whole idea is that you essentially automate jobs, right? So it's about cutting out specific touch point. Right now, the legislation is saying you have to identify yourself as an agentic AI if you're speaking to somebody on the phone, for example. We know for a fact that doesn't mm-hmm. happen. And that is kind of a big thing we need to overcome. However, the technology is so good already that you can have a whole conversation with an AI, you know, whether it's going to be a sales call or a collections call or whatever the case might be, and you might not know it. It's got human mannerisms, it stutters, it uses and R, it laughs at jokes. It's come a very far way in the last 12 months, and we expect this just to keep going, and it's going to make companies a lot of money.
All right, so now let's talk about some of the stuff that you wanted to bring up this morning. First of all, We've talked about cloud a little bit. I referred to how, you know, everybody now stores everything on the cloud. It seems to me to be an extraordinarily expansive business. In fact, they say Google's making more money out of its cloud storage capabilities, and it's developing faster in that arena than almost anywhere else. But let's just talk about Microsoft's AI and cloud expansion. Is this worth getting excited about?
I think so. South Africa is really at the forefront of cloud technology, especially in Africa, but also compared to many, many regions of the world. They are investing in another R5.5 billion in a data center that's going to host Azure, which is their cloud platform. And this is where they're going to build a lot of their own AI capabilities, right? So AWS, so Amazon Web Services, it's the majority part of the Amazon business. You can't even imagine that they make the vast majority of their profits from AWS and not from this, you know, conglomerate delivery business that's everywhere in the world. So this technology is moving us forward. And that's why NVIDIA, for example, just crossed the $4 trillion valuation mark, because they power a lot of these data centers with their chipsets. And obviously, a big part of that is
to be clear, because I didn't know this, South Africa is one of the places in the world where people want to build these data centers, where people are building these cloud storage facilities. Is that right? I didn't know yes. that we were like top of the pile, or at least near the top of the pile. I know Ireland was a big place for that for a while.
Yeah, so I mean, something a lot of people don't know, and Amazon is very hush about this, but one of their biggest data centers and cloud hosting centers in the world sits in Johannesburg, and it's very secretive. You wouldn't see, there's no Amazon kind of branding or anything. They just hosted here. They think it's a good investment. We've got very technical, very strong people that can manage that at a lot lower cost, obviously, compared to US or EU salaries. So that's why them and Microsoft have decided to invest heavily in South Africa. We've got really smart, really good people. And that's great for our local economy. It's pushing a lot of money, you know, in Cape Town. Amazon has built this whole new campus right outside of town. And that they're going to push more AWS cloud capabilities in there, but that's also where Amazon.co.za is hosted. Microsoft, as we said, is investing another R5.5 billion. They've already invested R20 billion in South Africa. So these are going to be kind of hot topic technologies in South Africa. And if you're a young South African seeing all of this, I think it's super exciting to come into the market at this point.
Good. Well, I'm glad that we're winning in some place. This is excellent news.
Finally.
Take it. I think the whole of South Africa is like, yeah, we'll take whatever. So I see the Competition Commission, who really, I don't know what these guys do, but they clearly are completely just disconnected from reality. They want to reshape big tech's role in media. I mean, this would have been a conversation they could have had 15 to 20 years ago, but they're only waking up to it now. Google could pay up to R500 million a year to support local news. Now, why would they do that? First of all, local news is not really even a thing if you consider the kinds of sources that in South Africa have wholly discredited themselves. We're talking about IOL, News 24. We're talking about, you know, Iqbal Serve. We're talking about Multi-Choice, we're talking about the SABC. I mean, when we talk about local news, who are we actually referring to as credible news sources in the first place? Second of all, even if they are credible, which they're not, how can the Competition Commission get involved and make Google pay for those news services? That doesn't seem like something Google would be ever interested in the slightest.
Not at all. And they've proved that. So the same kind of thing went down in Australia about a year and a half ago. The Australian government said Google is using these news sources in their search results, and they're serving ads on top of those search results. So they are profiting from these companies work with essentially without their permission was the argument. And that's where this whole concept came from, first of all, kind of trying to obviously help the local industry, because let's be honest, media is dying a very slow and painful death at this point. And yep. They want to bolster that with these costs from the likes of Google, Microsoft, Meta, through the Facebook. You know, if you share a post on Facebook and Facebook puts an ad right below or right above that, that's essentially the same kind of concept, right? So there's been these attempts by Australia. It didn't work effectively. What Google and Meta and Microsoft said mm-hmm. was, fine, if you bring in this law, we're just not going to deliver the service in this country. And the, right. the country's going to be worse off for it, right? And I think we'll see something similar in South Africa. Why it's coming through that commission, I'm not 100% sure. It seems like a kind of a desperate attempt to get money out of these big tech companies that sure are making money off of South Africans, but they deliver a valuable service. And I think, you know, yeah. if you don't want that service, fine, go somewhere else.
Yeah. And maybe if you ask the consumer, which people seem never to do, I mean, I don't know if you saw the news. I spoke to Sipiwe about it earlier, about how Temu are putting up a warehouse in South Africa. The government, SARS, has come up with this brilliant scheme where they're going to charge us more in customs and duties if we buy from Temu. But the only people benefiting from this are SARS, because Temu is going to get the same amount of money. We're going to pay a whole lot more to bring their things into South Africa. Even if we're buying cheap stuff, it's still going to cost us more because SARS puts their amount on top of that. And they're certainly not going to use that money at SARS to stimulate local businesses. So it's all a big scheme yeah. to just get more tax out of you. And the same goes for the Competition Commission. I mean, I can pretty much guarantee the people behind this stupid move are probably these shitty media organizations who realize that their revenues are running out, that nobody's subscribing for them. Nobody comes to them because they consider their content quality and credible. And therefore, they're thinking, well, what we can do is get the government to basically go to war for us against big tech. And you know what? If you ask the average South African consumer, who do you trust more? Google, X, Microsoft, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, or the South African Competition Commission, I don't think it's much of a question which one they'll choose.
No, that's a losing battle, 100% a losing battle. And you're right, the consumer is often the one that's going to suffer. With Temu now opening a local kind of distribution center, I think that's massive news, because SARS has already brought in additional taxes on the likes of Temu and Shein, right? Mm-hmm. So we're already seeing some of that pain. But having that last mile kind of delivery from a local distribution center already undercuts a lot of what the government is trying to do. And in typical Chinese fashion, they see a problem and they just jump. And they've built yep. this distribution center
and they're so
in
next
to no time.
They're so much smarter than our government. I mean, they're just so much smarter than SARS. It's fantastic. I hope that the consumer wins that battle. I hope Temu wins that battle. I hope the government loses that battle and the Competition Commission their battle. Okay, so Tennis, quick kind of quick fire stuff. Gaming, TVs. Where are the areas that South Africans spend most of their money when it comes to tech? What kind of stuff are you looking at as fast-moving consumer goods, the things that are being advertised the most desirable stuff? Give us some highlights yeah. there before we go.
Well, let's start with the bad news, I guess. One of the biggest growing industries in South Africa and the world is online betting, and especially sports yep. betting. And it has cost South Africans billions of rands, and there yep. are new companies enlisting and jumping into the ring in South Africa specifically every couple of weeks or months, it feels like. And that unfortunately is driven by tech as well. So these machine learning models are meant to have you spend as much money in as little time as possible, while still giving you a little bit of the carrot, right? So you win something here, you win something there, but at the end of the day, it's all about velocity of cash turning over, and they make a hell of a lot of money. Unfortunately, that's a massive trend that I'm hoping South Africans can kind of start to understand, because it will cost a lot of people, you know, everything, which is bad. But on the consumer side, I think there's a lot to be excited about. You guys were speaking about TV technology last week on the show, that's moving just as quick as anything else at this point. So we've got massive investment in South Africa, especially around the Cape Town area, in manufacturing plants for TVs. So the likes of TCL and Hisense, and even LG and Samsung are starting to invest a lot of money locally, which is great. And we can already see the fruits of that, right? So these TV prices are dropping. And then every now and again, you get something that's going to slot in at the highest price point, the latest technology. And that's kind of the cycle that keeps happening. I think when it comes to TV technology, a lot of it is going to be around the immersive experience. And the tech is driving that very, very quickly. I think if you buy a 10,000 Rand TV now, what you get compared to even 5 years ago is a massive improvement, and that technology is moving quickly. Yeah. So that's very exciting. I think in terms of other consumable tech, laptops are moving quickly as well. So we've got this trend now in tech where these massive companies are trying to essentially build an ecosystem and consolidate manufacturing. So that's why Apple, for example, started to make their own chipsets for their MacBooks. They don't use Intel for that anymore. The likes of Samsung have done it with Exynos, and that technology is moving quickly. We've got MediaTek and those kind of things. So the hardware is being integrated a lot more closely into the software, and we see those dividends in laptops already. You can get a laptop with a, let's say, an RTX 5090 graphics card, which is the top of the line kind of PC graphics card you can buy right now. And they're building mobile versions of that with new cooling technology, so that it can perform almost to the level, or as close to the level of the full-on card as possible. So I think the PC market is suffering. So the, you know, building your own PC, putting all the pieces together, at the expense of even gaming laptops and much powerful laptops that are dropping in price very quickly, and people are using that for everything, which I think is super exciting as well. Other than that, you know, things are changing quickly. Crypto is becoming more pervasive. Bitcoin just hit 2 million rand of Bitcoin this week as well. So there's just, you know, you can't blink or you'll miss something big.
So let's just talk quickly about something that the audience on this show won't let me forget. I stupidly paid a portion of my TV license a while ago just to get these guys off my back. And I am in the market for a new TV. What are the most exciting things to look forward to there? I hear a lot of people talking about how projector TV, the technology there is phenomenal. You can just have a white wall and project something on there, and it's like being in a movie theater. I hear other people saying, and you've just said it too, that it's becoming cheaper and better to buy, you know, the pixel. Like, it's just incredible how much detail and the level of texture you can get out of a TV, a screen TV now. So what's your favorite thing there? I mean, what do you prefer in your own house?
Yeah, I think projectors definitely are a big topic at the moment, because that is moving quickly. So projectors are very different to, you know, even 5 years ago, where you would need this massive bulky things hanging from the roof and it's kind of throwing the light onto the wall. And that caused a lot of issues, obviously, if you've got a light source that's far away from where you need it, and it's a white wall, so it's dispersing the light everywhere throughout the room, right? Mm-hmm. So the quality wasn't great, the color accuracy was not good, and if there's mm-hmm. any light coming from outside of the room, I mean, it's a horrible experience. the way that's changing now is that there's something called short throw projections, which is a new technology that uses prisms in the projector itself, which means you can essentially put your projector on the ground, only a meter or two away from the wall it's going to project at. And the quality is next level compared to the previous kind of iterations of this technology.
Really?
The color accuracy is great, and now it is getting super bright, which is the biggest shortfall, obviously, of projectors, especially if you're trying to watch something during the day, if you don't have a blacked out room. But the short throw projectors are moving extremely quickly, and it's still prohibitively kind of expensive for most people. But if you've got a not even a media room, but a room that is easily kind of shuttered and you can get most of the light out, a projector is a real option for a lot of people now compared to buying a 65-inch TV, because this projector can run on Bluetooth, it's got Wi-Fi, you can connect an Ethernet cable, you can even game on it and connect your console to it as well. So it's becoming a very exciting space to watch, because it's making things more usable, easier to kind of get through those initial hurdles. And it's again dropping in price. So there's a very decent Samsung one, for example, called the Freestyle, that's come out onto the market, and you can buy it for about 8,000 to 10,000 rand, depending on kind of when you see it.
I just want to throw this in.
10,000 rand TV is not going to be the same.
Dennis, just quickly. So, Slippery Pickle says projectors are the best for watching Japanese tentacle porn. You really get to take in the whole scene, or so I've heard. and then someone says here that ultra shot throw 4K projectors are fantastic, but you need a specific screen to reject ambient light. Gareth, your camera's moving up and down. Okay, yeah, I sorted that out. I think we've got that dealt with, but thank you for that. Tennis, what about drones? Someone asked about drones. Are they still a thing? Because a company tried to sell me one offering via installments. This is from Judas. Are drones still a big deal? Are people still excited about those?
I think it's lost a little bit of its shine, but it's still a very, very popular kind of gadget for a lot of people, especially, you know, if you're just kind of dabbling in it. As I said, good tech is getting cheap, so you can get a really cheap little drone and just have a bit of fun. And on the other end, the kind of imaging technology and the camera systems that they're putting on drones has come an immensely far way in the last couple of years, with the likes of DJI obviously being world leaders at this point. It's still, if you are in the creative business, If you need to take aerial shots of anything, it's a great option to do that. I think the reason people are a little bit hesitant on that now is, and sorry to come back to this, but AI. So with generative AI, with videos and sound being able to be generated right now, the likes of the marketing industry are panicking, because they're saying, we're not going to be able to make 30-second ads anymore, because that's going to be created by generative AI and people won't be able to tell the difference. Same happens now with the drone industry. People are holding back a little bit. How useful is AI going to be for my creative tasks compared to spending 15,000, 20,000, even 50,000 rand for a decent rig on a drone that's going to give me the same kind of image quality?
Listen, an hour is not enough with you, and we've only had 45 minutes, but thank you very much for your time. We can go and find out more by going to Bandwidth blog, and you can get hold of Tennis there. But thank you so much, man. It's lovely to see you, and have an awesome weekend.
Yeah, it's nice to be back. Thanks, Gareth. Have a good one.
Cool. Very good. We'll see you on Monday, bright and early at 6 a.m. Have an awesome weekend, everybody. Bye.